This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Awesome Woodies. Awesome Woodies are the original portable hangboard company made by hand here in Australia. They were making these boards years before anyone else. Maybe you've seen their boards hanging off the cliff or a tree at your local crag. They're everywhere. And do you know why? Because they work. Nothing else is going to get you warmed up for your project like the cliff board will. No more shall you pull onto your project with unrecruited fingers. No more shall you burn precious skin doing extra warm-ups. The Awesome Woodies cliff boards are here for you. They love you and want you to be ready for a full day of awesomeness. Their cliff boards still lead the way with quality, durability and functionality. Plus they weigh almost nothing. Take the cliff board Petite for example, one I personally designed with the team. It weighs 280 grams. Mate, my Vegemite sandwich nearly weighs more than that. The cliff boards are also great if you don't have the ability to have a proper hangboard set up at your home. If you do have space for a fixed hangboard or campus board though, Awesome Woodies have got you covered. The Homeboy hangboard is the boss. The wood edges on this board are super comfortable to spend a lot of time hanging from, even when you've trashed yourself all weekend at the crag. Awesome Woodies can also cover your campus board with all the grips you need. Campus rungs in four different sizes, sloper rails and half balls. Everything is there for you to power up. Now for those of you into a minimal aesthetic or just like boning down, Awesome Woodies have got edgies. Pairs of 6, 8 and 10 mil edges made out of premium Tassie oak, which is sourced from sustainable plantations. So not only do these edges look the goods, they are doing good. In fact, all the Awesome Woodies products are made from sustainably sourced timber. Their commitment to the environment and quality really sets these guys apart from the rest. So head to awesomewoodies.com, chuck in BaffleDays at checkout for 15% off your next piece of game-changing equipment. G'day everyone and welcome to the Baffle Days podcast. I'm your host Tom O'Halloran and I'm here with my partner and co-host Amanda Watts. How are you going, Amanda?
Pretty good, thanks.
Glad to be here, I hope.
Awesome as always.
Couldn't sound more stoked.
I need a little more chocolate ice cream.
And to help us on our journey tonight, we have Helen Day and Lee Cooges. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
So tonight we've got you both in to talk about dirty tricks that climbers employ to get themselves up roots or up boulder problems. And we've made a little bit of a list here to dive into deeply and probably not going to all come to the same conclusions. You might not agree with all of our opinions, but...
I think everyone will agree with me.
Yeah.
No.
It's easier that way if we all just agree with you.
We'll talk about that one when we're off the podcast.
But I think we just start with the crown jewel in the dirty tricks crown. Knee bars and knee pads. Lee, when I thought about bringing knee bars and knee pads into this talk, I thought, well, we've got to have Lee Cooges because I think... 10 years ago, maybe longer, you were one of the first people to make a commercially available knee bar pad.
Yeah, most people probably wouldn't know that now. Like the whole idea of buying a pad, that was not a thing at all. So when we started climbing, mostly, I mean, it did start in Australia, like in terms of like people taking pads to the cliff. Mount Coolum in Queensland was like when it started getting developed in the early 2000s to mid 2000s. That was, people were just scrounging around in op shops for wetsuits and then were cutting the knees out of wetsuits. And that was what you did. And you found that one knee bar on a route. And to now where you can buy 10 different kinds of pads and, you know, there's 13 knee bars on one pitch and everything. Yeah, it's certainly changed a lot.
And they started just to protect your leg from getting bruised, didn't they? As opposed to having sticky rubber on them to help assist you staying there.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Coolum used to just would bloody you up every time you got on a route. So, like, that was a factor. But I think it was a bit of... I think it was a mix of both. Like, it started thinking, oh, wow, I'm just getting cut every time I put my knee... Because you were still doing knee bars for the purpose of knee barring, like, to get a rest or whatever. But if you're doing it at sharp rock or whatever, people were thinking, oh, it'd actually probably be better than wearing long pants, particularly in Queensland where
it's put on, so sweaty.
Oh, you die.
Yeah.
So like it's just way too sweaty to like be wearing, oh, you could just, people are like, oh, you could just wear a pair of Carhartts or something. Put Carhartts on, 10 minutes later, you're dead. So
what are Carhartts?
Oh, like you know those
trendy workwear pants.
Oh, like that's why jeans, I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
Thick jeans kind of things. Oh, you could just wear them and be fine. Yeah, no, it's way too hot. So board shorts and like hacked off like the elbows out of an extra light, because the knees were often too big. That was the tricky thing about buying wetsuits for knee pads. You put on like, you get like a small kiddies one, or you need like an extra large and you have to use the elbows. That was like optimum tension. And so you'd like, yeah, wrestle those on. And most of the routes, like in fact, all really of the Coolum routes, except for maybe the most modern ones, were done really with that kind of pad. So no sticky rubber. So Amanda's right. Like it wasn't for that, but we were still using them in that same way. So, you know, you'd still be pushing and like getting rests and resting off knee bars. But I guess Coolum was the types of knee bars and the facets of the rock don't necessarily need that much of, you know, in terms of sticky rubber, although the modern pads are like way, they're way better, no question. But yeah, we were making them. So the first company that made them ever was, that I know of, was Delia in Canada, and they took a pad of rubber and just glued it onto a like a medical knee brace. And that's the ones that were originally used in rifle and jailhouse and places like that, would just like pull on, slip on, and then they would duct tape them on. And so they were just selling them for like $30. And that's what was available. And then I thought, oh, we just need a better thing. And so Upskill was, we got them all sewn up, and it was a dude in Brisbane that was, he made like triathlon wetsuits. So he had the good tech for like, because it's really, if you've ever tried to sew neoprene, you'll just bust your mum's sewing machine like in 3 seconds, like the needles just snap.
Need an industrial sewing machine.
Yeah, and even the industrial ones, you've got to like sew it in a special stitch pattern, otherwise the needle, the neoprene's really grabby and it grabs the needle and it does weird things. So yeah, we got some guy that made wetsuits to produce these pads for like, I don't know, 5, 6, or 7 years. Some of them are still getting around. It's pretty cool.
I've got someone at the house still. Oh, I feel like I need to bring them out because I've got a few different iterations of it.
Yeah, it was fun. But then when like Send came out with the good, you know, it was just like, oh, great. Someone's doing it, doing it even better. That's great. We don't have to do this anymore. We'll just buy them.
Yeah.
See, what you should have done though is what we used to do when we had bootleg climbing pants before like the tights now.
I remember those.
Yeah. I had a big white stripe down the side of them. They were like racing stripe. You just rolled up your pants to just above your knee and it made a nice cushiony bit. And that's what protected you in a rest. But any other use of it was cheating.
Yeah.
Well, so I think this is where it starts to get interesting. It's
cheating.
Like, where does it sit? Do knee bars count?
I think, yes. Look, everyone's going to use them. I hate them. Drive me crazy. I remember being on August with you, Lee Cooges, and seeing you, I think, did you wear your knee pad? Got up to the rest.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty much
hands-free. Asking Lee whether he used his knee pad or wore it is like whether he had pants on.
Mm.
Like it just happens. He wears pants and knee pads.
Yep. And seeing, I nearly cried when I saw you get like that rest with
I didn't
the
know
knee
that.
Pad. Well, I just thought that's cheating. I don't even know if it holds the grade anymore.
I think she started looking for rocks to throw at you. And
yeah. But I think that's where it comes down to is I think, you know, it's interesting watching the climbers at the cliff now because there's so many and climbing is not self-regulated in Australia as well as it used to be. So what I mean by that is there used to be just a bunch of a small group of people that were climbing the routes. They all knew each other really well. Someone puts up a new route, 6 other people climb it. They're like, hey, dude, you undergraded it. Or you're a sandbagger. That's definitely, no, that's the other way around, isn't it? You undergraded it, you're a sandbagger. You've overgraded it. That's ridiculous. And a grade consensus would happen. And everyone had similar beta or there was a beta change and it all got sorted out. Now we've got all these people that are wearing like triple knee bar pads, ankles, thighs, hip pads.
And full wetsuits.
So does the grade hold if you can suddenly get a hands-free rest in the middle of a route that never existed before?
I just take what I can get, really.
Yeah, now I do. Now
but what about climbing?
I wore a knee pad on August the other day.
That's the thing. So, like, this climb, August, I don't know how many times I've fallen off, like, the very highest point you can fall. And I'm like, okay, where's this knee bar?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to take what I can get. I still haven't done it, but I got the knee bar now. Yeah. So, I think it'll go down with knee bar. Yeah. I'm taking it.
What was your opinion before that, though? Like, take us back to Helen.
Nah, I'm not going to. Nah, I wouldn't do that. Nah. Then, yeah, hey, I haven't done it. So, now I'm just like,
everyone else is doing it. So, why be a purist?
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess I was being a purist. I was like, I don't need the knee bar. It's just annoying. It's annoying to stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever.
I had a good chat to Gary Phillips. Like, so Tassie probably doesn't have. Or certainly, maybe 10 years ago, there wouldn't have been a hell of a lot of knee bars in Tassie just because of the way the rock forms and it's a lot of trad. But Gary and the guys there have been developing a short, steep sandstone area. And Gary was developing that primarily with his Tassie skills and strong dude and like doing all the roots front on and just power. And then the wave of repeaters that came through to repeat those roots were just like, oh, Gary, there's knee bars everywhere on these routes. He's like, what? He was disgusted. And, of course, they're repeating his routes really quickly and like, oh, I don't know, about 30 on that, Gary, and like saying these kinds of things. He's like, well, if you use the bloody knee bars, of course it's not. But it was funny to go through that. And it was only like last year. But that was exactly all of the same thing that happens when another new knee bar is found on some route, or like the first ascensionists did it a certain way and it got a grade. And then once all the knee bars are found and once all the beta works out, things do shake out, I think, over time. And whoever put the route up is going to be, you know, annoyed and kind of probably a bit shirty that they didn't find it themselves. But when all the key beta is worked out, I think things settle down and maybe the route becomes a little bit easier if people do it. I mean, at a place like Coolum, like Helen's been there a bit and you know, like it's super beta intensive. And if you just had no beta at all, the roots are going to feel really hard. Yeah. And then once you have everything and if someone sprays you down with every perfect thing, I mean, that's the easiest way to climb the route. So if we're talking about like lines of least resistance and the easiest way to climb routes, it seems to be an accepted norm.
Mm. I remember going there with the same mentality, being like, nah, I don't need knee pads. And then just being like, wow, now this is... I can't do this grade 25, 26. It's really hard. And then, yeah, knee pads. So I think I borrowed a knee pad off someone. I was like,
which is pretty gross.
That is a gross thing.
It was really gross. Yeah.
But that's pre-COVID. Yeah. We wouldn't do it these days.
No, definitely not.
I borrowed a knee pad off someone back in like 2009 or something. And I reckon about last week I got the smell out of my knee. No, that's an exaggeration. But honestly, it took probably 2 or 3 days to get that stank out of my thigh. Like it just somehow got into my skin. I used so much scrubbing and soap and soaked it. It was just horrendous. Those old wetsuit.
So what if the technology evolves though? So there's a ridge on a shoe that catches on a little nubbin of rock that can then be used as a heel hook.
Like those Mad Rocks?
Yes, there's some Mad Rock shoes that can
do
that. And
some old Scarpas.
And I've got a friend that can get, she can heel hook on this. It's not a heel hook. It's like a crimp. But because of this particular bit of rubber on the Mad Rock, it catches on it and changes the move.
Mm.
Is that okay?
On the Mad Rock or on knee bar pads?
Well, it's just the evolution from knee bar pads, isn't it?
You know
it?
What where's I think is really, I know where you're going with this. I think it's really similar. I was thinking about this in terms of, and look, I don't do any kind of like ice climbing or mixed climbing. But there's a parallel, and the parallel was the fact that, do you remember when the guys, you know, like say 10 years ago or whatever, with dry tooling, where they have all these crazy grades that we don't really understand what it is, but it's just Stevie Haston hanging upside down in some cave with ice axes and some kind of fluoro lycra or something, that the boots were really key and had this same kind of idea of what they used to have. So they'd have like front points on these boots, but then they would also have a heel spur. And so what that allowed is you could get up into a roof on some M12 whatever dry tooling route and you could put in your heel spurs and basically just bat hang off the heel spurs. Mm. And all the hardest dry tooling routes in the world were put up with spurs on. but the sport self-regulated. So the people that were in that, so Will Gadd and all those guys were just like, in fact, we're seeing this as like a, because you can just dead hang off your skeleton off, you can indefinitely rest in a, in a huge cave. And it takes, yes, we can get up harder routes, but now the guys started to do those hard routes spurless and then started to basically put pressure back on the sport to say, you know what, that's not kosher anymore. We think that we got to remove the spurs from, and so certainly people can still go out and climb with spurs, but they wouldn't be doing the routes, and the that community would say that no, that's not in. So yeah,
that'd be an interesting point to get to in climbing, be like, where does that line get drawn? Like, what, imagine what the future technology would be where you're just like, nah, no more, you can't go beyond this.
But even rubber types, you know, like we our rubber types get better and notionally get better and better, and different kinds of rubber and rubber that performs better at different temperatures and blah blah blah, makes a massive difference.
I kind of feel like with
say no to the heel spurs on climbing shoes, thanks.
No spurs. You're with Will Gadd.
I'm spurless.
Yep.
There you go, Mad Rock. Get the grinders out, get rid of them. I feel a bit like if we could, I have a love-hate relationship with knee bars where I love them when I need them, but I hate them when someone comes along and finds it on a route that I've done without it and they put one in and you're like, no, you've just wrecked the route. Stop doing that. You've wrecked it.
He literally came home from Elphinstone and said that.
Yeah, yeah. Stu Simons, you know exactly who
Master
I'm talking to.
Master of the knee bar. Found one on mechanical animals.
He didn't find one on mechanical animals.
Well.
Oh, yeah. The rest. No, this was beta vinyl that he was on. No,
yeah, I know, but he did find one on mechanical animals.
Yeah, but that's in the
Jake
rest.
Jake was using it.
That's okay. I'll accept that one.
Not the jug rest that everyone uses. Like.
Yeah, yeah, like two moves higher.
Yes.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll accept it. But in the middle of a hard section of climbing, that's just like pure awesomeness, you can't put in a knee bar because it just wrecks it. Unless it's my project and it's hard and I need it there, in which case I'll accept it. Which is kind of the conflict that I had a little while ago with a route that I was trying at Nowra. And you're trying to work it all out and it's like, oh man, I wish there was just a better rest here. And then you work out a knee bar and it's like, oh, but I don't want it to be there. I want to do it without. But then people are going to come along and find it and go, you're off chops. I put this in and suddenly it's a grade easier because you get a rest before the crux or whatever.
I don't know about you guys when you put up roots or boulders or whatever. I always just have to think, and even if like you're setting things in a gym or like setting a problem, if there's some easier way, whatever it is, and you're just thinking, no, but the cool way, like it's obvious, like go up to this edge and then you'll flick and like jump up to there. Oh, but, or you could just do this thing that steps 1 foot to the left and they can grab that jug and then go, oh, well, that's what everyone is going to do. Climbers, whatever, they will always take. They're not going to do the cool thing.
No.
They're not going to do what you thought was good. And then therefore, like when you're putting up something, like you just got to figure out, oh, well, I've got to meet in the, like that's the way they'll go. So rather than having like forcing the bolt out in some other position or whatever, you just actually have to figure out what people are going to, and try to anticipate what people are going to do. So they'll always find the easiest way.
Absolutely.
And probably half the times you don't see it, but then they figure it out because they're pretty wily like that.
Cheeky climbers. Yeah.
What about knee bars then, Lee, on the moonboard?
Surprisingly, I haven't, you know, people know I've got a couple of moonboards, but I've not actually found a good knee bar on the moonboard.
Do you moonboard with your knee pad on just in case?
No, although I have, like, I've got some holds above the moonboard. So when I circuit sometimes, it's possible to, it's possible to rest in a knee bar, which I would train for. Like if I had a route, you know, something you're training for Europe or some big thing that had a knee bar rest, cool to do a circuit and then like rest in a knee bar and then keep going in the circuit.
Stefano Gasolfi found a knee bar hands-free, I think, on the speed route and reckons it got him enough power back to do the top half, the top sort of third quite quickly. So,
oh, we might see that in the Olympics.
Yeah, it's got potential.
Bit of a mid-height camp out.
Yeah.
So my last question though about knee bars is I have to ask myself this, where does my dislike and my purest attitude towards them come from?
I agree.
Like, why do we care?
Is it based, I guess, on what people have done before us? And that's how it's been done. And so I think knee pads and knee bars are a new thing. And so you're like, oh, that's not how it's done.
I think of it, yeah, like coming into the sport with sticky climbing rubber. And that's just what we knew from the beginning. And you're like, well, that's just what it is. But, you know, go back to the 60s or 70s, pre-sticky rubber, when that's coming in.
Dunlop volleys were pretty sticky.
Yeah, they didn't have a great edge though.
True.
Yeah, not an asymmetrical fit. Yeah, I think it's what we grow up with, eh?
Mm.
It is important. Like, for some people, I don't think they like what they care about is ticking the root or problem in the book, and then for other people, it's more about either doing it like the first Ascensionist did it. That matters for style. Some people.
It's about style. Mm.
Yeah, and that there's a stylistic element to that. Like, okay, that guy in 1988 did it in that way, in that kind of method.
Mm.
I'd really like to see if I can hold myself to that and do it in that way. And that's where I think a lot of with the knee bar thing, if the roots, I mean, a lot of roots these days, they're just going up with knee bars. And then like all my roots have got that I've been bolting recently are heavily knee bar dependent. And then, but someone will come through and they'll find, like I found three and then they'll find two more or something. Right. And I'll go, grr, why didn't I see that? And maybe that makes it easier or whatever. But that's my cross to bear, not theirs. But with the older, you know, these really classic older roots that you're like, oh, well, we know how the first Ascensionists did it and they didn't knee bar.
But so this is, okay, so you said something interesting there though. You said, ah, grr, they found two more. Maybe it makes it a bit easier now. So then it comes down to everyone, and you know, you hear this at the cliff, grades don't matter. They actually do, to a degree, because that's how you decide if a route is something you should or shouldn't get on. And most people that I see don't go to the cliff and go, I like the look of that climb, I'll just go up that. They want to know what the grade is, and they want to know if it's better than they climbed before, harder than they climbed before, easier than they climbed before. So I think that's part of it is, does a route hold its grade if it's done in a different style, which is then with a hands-free knee bar rest in it?
Mm.
Or does it change the grade?
It does. Like, if it's just, it's beta. You find better
but
beta.
But nobody will ever own up to that and say, I did it with knee bar rest, so I reckon it's a grade easier than it says in the guide.
Well, I mean, look at probably a good famous one would be something like Wheel of Life. It's one that a lot of people would know about, and that whole difference of, you know, when... So Dyer's done it originally, no knee bars as far as I'm aware, certainly no pads. And then, but subsequently, like as the tech has improved and as knee bars have become more, you know, apparent, like nearly everybody since then has used every
single Ascensionist since then has used a knee bar, not necessarily a pad as well, but sure. They've used knee bars.
But like you can, because of the way that problem / root breaks down, you can.
It's a problem, not a root.
You can get, well, you know, whatever. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, that is.
it's just one of those things. Like you can, how you choose to climb it, does it affect the difficulty? Well, the difficulty is only for you anyway. So a route is only as hard as you found it. If you've got an incredibly reachy, like if there's 10 incredibly reachy or dinos and you're X height, it's going to be way harder for you. The number on it is irrelevant. It's going to be really hard for you. And for that guy or girl that is 6'8" or whatever and can just casually reach between all of the moves, it's going to be way easier for them.
Mm.
So things are super subjective. If people are really married to grades in that way, it just kind of shows the fact that grades don't really work. They're certainly not universal. They're personal to some degree, particularly when it comes to morphology, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
And knee bars don't always necessarily make things easier because they can break, you know, if you're resting in a position where you should have really been going, knee bars themselves can be quite taxing.
Mm.
It's a tactical tool, just like shaking out at a horizontal for a given period of time or racing through can be a tactical tool. Mm. It's just another tool.
Yep.
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 Yeah. Let's take a universe where we've got the Men in Black erase your memory tool, erase everyone's memory in the world. Lee, what do you reckon? Do we keep knee bars or do we erase it from people's minds?
How old am I at the time?
Today. Friday the 13th, 2020.
Em. 2 weeks.
Keep them, Helen.
Keep them.
Keep them, Amanda.
Before I had Audrey, get rid of them. Post Audrey, keep them.
I'm getting rid of them.
Tom.
I'm getting rid of them. Banished to the seventh layer of hell. Wrapped up. Let's move on. Topic number two, dirty tricks. Ethical
quagmires.
Quagmires, yes. McDougaling.
Now, people might not know this term. It's yeah, great. So we can clear
I've not
up.
Ever heard the term before until recently, but I'm aware of what it is as a...
Even where the term doesn't exist, the practice exists.
Exactly.
Worldwide.
That's what I'm trying to find.
Worldwide. We can put a name on it for people that are listening. You can take this term and use the cliff when you see somebody doing this.
Yeah. So, Lee, do you want to perhaps quickly explain
the concept? Yeah, the concept is, and we all know this concept, where there might be a, and let's talk about it in root terms rather than boulders, where you essentially avoid the crux on a route. So this might mean traversing, there might be a sequence
just
where
anything
you can
really going off route.
Yeah, going off route, particularly used, I mean, most commonly, and I think this term has a specific reference, and it's the way that it's been told to me, and I'll just pass on the rumor around the fire, is that there's a famous, I think this was my first 25 as a route in Centennial Glen. Yeah, I travelled down on a trip from Queensland and did that as my first 25. There's a route called Madge McDonald. And on the route, there is a way at the top where you can go either left or right. And there was an accepted way. And the accepted way, I think, was right. Helen will correct me.
Yes.
And then, you know, some people were saying, oh, yeah, but if you go round to the left, go this other way, oh, it's a bit easier or whatever. Now, I can't actually recall which way I went. Probably, I don't know. It was in 2000. So.
Oh, you would have gone right.
No one
It didn't left. Exist.
It didn't exist. Okay, so yeah, it was in 2000. So that concept of going left on that route, people were starting to call that, oh, you did Madge McDougall. And so then you didn't do Madge McDonald, you did Madge McDougall. You're doing a McDougall. And then that term was then, it proliferated around. Anytime somebody like did the unacceptable thing and move, you know, just went around that crux or skirted around or did something that was a bit shady, it was a McDougall. So people can take that term now.
So this is where we like try and work out what is considered kind of off route. What is the way that it has to be done? I mean, Lee, you're just talking before with the knee bars and people finding new beta. And, you know, a knee bar is the new bit of beta. And also when you're bolting, you're like, oh, there's this rad move and you're going to hit that and jump up and cut loose and do a cool flick. Or there's this hold half a meter to the left.
Well, at the cliff the other day, an old school climber up here was teaching his son about the routes. And I think it was the top of Veterans Affair. And he was telling him he was off route if he went out left to this particular rest, which is the way that every 1,000 people that I've seen do the route, including me, have done it. I've never seen anyone go direct, ever. And so he's like, that's where the bolts go. I'm like, I'm sure they do. So what I said to him was, are you telling me that the first ascensionist always puts the bolts in the right spot? Because I know that they don't. And I also know that a route that I bolted at Gateway, there was this cool hold in the roof, great big hole that I wanted to use. And so I bolted the route for that hole. Did the route, everyone else that climbed with me did it that way. And then when none of us were at the cliff, everyone else found this row of crimps to the right, and that's the way the route goes now.
Oh yeah, it is too.
Yeah, no one goes into the hole even. So does that mean they're McDougaling, or does that mean that?
So I think what you need to do, yeah, is like every week go down with a spray bottle and a brush and brush the chalk off the crimps and re-put the chalk up through the hole in the roof.
With an arrow.
possibly with an arrow.
Which
that,
is not.
Might, you need to like, you know, wear the track
incorrect.
In. Like wear it. Yeah, yeah.
And like in a competition, they put the black tape. It's like this part of the wall's out of bounds.
And a black diamond poster for Adam Ondra to stand on.
Yeah. I do not know what you are talking about. That was a bad Czech accent.
So Helen, what do you think? When are you off route?
Oh, I don't know. When are you off route?
So the top of Madge, I think, is an interesting one, because I don't think the evolution of that route too is that I think Toby Benham broke a hold off in that sort of little traversy section just before you get to the very top of the cliff to clip the anchor. So it just goes a little bit differently now. And I do it both ways, like either way when we're warming up on it. And I think they're equally as the same. They feel the same.
Yeah, there's I'm thinking of a climb down at Lower Shipley at the moment, a 27 I did down there, left of Nikita. What's that one?
Unforgiven. Unforgiven,
like super classic line. And yeah, I think I moved one move left and stood on a ledge. And
I did too.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. It's really obvious. But I got a lot of shit for that.
No, I don't think, yeah, again, everyone's going to stand on that ledge. It's right. It's totally on the route.
And I'm like, how? That is so en route. And then, but some people will go like 1 meter to the right and shake out. It's like, I guess it's kind of a similar thing to the, are you trying to be a purist or you just want to get fitter? I don't know.
That's an interesting one too, is like where does the rest line stop? So there's Aristocat at Elphinstone. Kind of climbs this arete and you weave either side onto the slab or underneath as you kind of make your way up and you're following this line of holds, but there's a rest up on the slab and it's kind of accepted that you just stay within a certain distance of the arete rather than going further and further off to the left where it's like you could get an even better rest. And
so it's your peers keeping you in line.
Yeah, but where is that arbitrary line drawn?
By how much shit you get from your friends.
Yeah. Whether or not you can get a lift home.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think that's an
penalty
interesting...
Penalty slack.
Yeah.
I think we need some kind of... I'm sure there's an algorithm, like where it's like, okay, you take... It's the...
Standard deviation.
Yeah, the standard deviation of the median distance between bolts of that route and the adjacent route. You know, you can... I can't even remember what the rule was, but... well-known Natamuck climber Gareth Llewellyn had a good rule for when you were off route, and it had to do with like whether you were like out of reach of the line of the bolts or something along those lines. So if you've actually started to migrate off the route so far that you couldn't actually reach back into where the line of the clipping would be, that you were technically then off route. But there's a good example of this on a well-known US route in the Red River Gorge called Kaleidoscope. It's like a famous 13C, like a 30, that was already bolted, and it goes up a great overhanging and leaning arete, and it has a really bouldery first section up onto sort of almost a break in the arete, and then it just blasts straight up this really scoopy, amazing arete. First ascent by Australian, Monique Forestier, did the first ascent, but I had a go of that route, and because it's total mega classic, but as I climbed up the first section and looked across to the left, where just before it would launch out the final section of the arete, there was like, 6 meters to the left, where there's no other routes, there was so much chalk in this horizontal break on like a slab. Like probably $150 worth of Friction Labs was like packed into this whole ledge section where people were evidently just traversing, like clipping the bolt and then taking like a 5 or 6 meter traverse to the left so they could stand and shake out fully before traversing back on the route. And it hurt me so much that people were doing it that way. And I'm just going to go out, I'll defend Monique. I'm sure she wouldn't have done it that way. I haven't spoken to her about it, but I'm sure she would have just climbed the route. But it was such an obvious dick around to like traverse basically off the entire cliff so you can have a rest to then come back. I was like, I don't even want to do this route anymore because of that whole issue of, you know, now everyone that's ticked that route, I can tell by the amount of chalk how many people have done that rest, and it just shitted me off so much. It wasn't even my route, but I was like, that's so dumb to traverse off that much to have a rest, and that's what everyone's doing. It's like clearly not cool. From a stylistic point of view, I don't care. Like everyone does it that way, that's fine, but like I was not interested in doing the route. It's like, that's so dumb.
Yeah, it sounds like complete bollocks. Like you just, it is what it is. That was me, I'd go up there with a bunch of quick set cement, just fill it in. Just like probably 2 meters so no one can get over.
And we don't have to talk about all of the dark arts of where first ascensionists have done that and worse to stop people getting into weird rest.
Are you allowed to put a jumper on in a rest?
Put one
leave,
on.
So.
Can you leave snacks at a rest?
Yeah, can you leave snacks at a rest?
As long as they're not off route.
Can you leave cups of tea?
I've left liquid chalk. I've left, various supplies. Water.
Skittles.
Yeah, like lots of stuff. Do a full wardrobe change at the rests.
Swap out the triple strap knee bar pad for this single strap one.
Yeah, take one off. Take off the stiff shoes and put the soft ones on for the upper section.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, I think one thing that comes to mind for me with the McDougling is, and I've seen it a couple of times, and it just kind of hurts. There's a route at Diamond Falls, Mr. Universe, and people take a bit of an off. It's hard down low. There's a hard middle section, and then there's the red point crux at the top. It's the last 4 or 5 meters to the anchor, and you can kind of get a bit of a half shake just before you do the last bit, and you just blast straight up. The bolts are there, boom, done. But people I've seen kind of tuck off to the right, off into the easy finish of Mr. Carpetburn, the neighboring route, and it kind of does climb a little bit that way, if that's the way you want it to go, but it climbs so purely straight up, and it completely misses the difficulty of the last hard bit. And it just, and I've watched people at the cliff, and they're like, do it, and that's their red point, it's like done, and you're like, oh, that's not Mr. Universe. You haven't done it. That's something different. That is Mr. Puniverse or something, I think it's been called. But you're just like, you don't want to rain on their parade, and sorry, I'm doing it now. But it's like, that's off route. It's not the thing. You've missed the crux. And that's not an adaption of beta. That's not like stepping across half a foot. It's like, you've entirely climbed around the crux.
It's tricky when you wouldn't, like if no one was at the cliff, and obviously this is a pretty chalked cliff, but if it wasn't so chalked and it had a big rainstorm on it or whatever, and you just climb from the ground and you're climbing on the bolts and you take the line of least resistance because that's what climbing is supposed to be, where would you actually climb? You know, where would just someone that doesn't know the cliff, they don't know the rules, if you have to explain the rules of a route to somebody, it just, you know, you start taking stars off the route. And I've got routes like that, so I know what that's about. At locals only cliffs where it's like, oh, we're just doing this to make it harder and blah, 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 and there's this weird thing. But yeah, it starts to get pretty unclassic if you have to start explaining how to do something.
I think this one came about actually because of a hold breaking from memory, and there might even be a chipped slot in there which you can climb around without using. But yeah, it just kind of sucks. And you just like, you've missed it. And I think, don't quote me on this. I'm sorry if I've got it wrong. I think you miss the bolt that protects the crux, potentially. I could be making that up to make my story sound better. Mm. But it's something like that. It's just like, it seems obvious. There are holds there and you go that way. And so stick to the line, I reckon. I'm not going to get into going off for rest or whatever, but for that one, it irks me. So, yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of that around. Stick to it. Do it properly.
People always do what's easiest. That's my quote of the podcast.
But you can do that, but you can't claim that you did the route if you get off route.
They'll claim it.
I think just be honest about it.
You've got to be honest. I think, if you can be honest about it. Sorry, jumping over you.
That's it. But, that's all I was going to say.
Like if you can stand there and have 30 people watch you do it and go, this is what I did and this is what I'm claiming it as, and you're happy to say that and you're confident that they're all going to be like, yep, cool, done, then great.
You need the, whatever the ticking method, you know, what do we use these days?
We need like the high 8A. Court.
I haven't been on 8A for a million years.
No, I haven't it's been on a whole 8A new since website. Whenever I stop recording them.
But like they need, okay, so Mr. Universe, right, needs to have a little drop down that you must select. Like it's got the real... But it explains it, says, the hard person's variant or the wimpy cop out Mr. Puniverse variant or whatever, and you have Puny to select people. Yeah, you must select whatever the variant is, because otherwise people aren't going to be honest unless you grill them on it, and even then
it always surprises me though, people's like how many shots it took you to do something. Like if I don't believe the tripe starts up the same start as 16 other routes or something, I don't think I can claim that I did. If I was going to claim that I did any other route off there, I don't know, 5th go, 10th go, 2nd go, I'd have to say, let's say tripe, top half 2nd go, 30 million goes for the first time that I did a route on that wall.
Yeah, it's weird when people claim on sites and flashes of link ups. There's like, and I think there's been some rules and talk about that. That's another one that gets people really riled up, where it's like, oh, the link up component was easier than what I'd previously done on this other link up. So I'd already done the hard climbing, but I'm just going to call it a flash. Yeah, but maybe not.
No, for sure. That's a whole new can of worms, isn't it?
We're not going to get into that.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's a proper ethics one, not just dirty tactics. but I think that just about wraps up McDougling.
Take it, love it.
No, the term gotta, that you've got to climb the line. Got to climb the line. Otherwise, honestly, express what it was that you climbed.
Or just be able to climb it both ways. So I the match. So it's like, yes, originally everyone climbed it right. And then it's like, oh, wow, you can go left. I just go left. I like it better. But I can do right if I need to.
Yeah, totally.
Or just, yeah, be honest with what you did. So if someone stands there and says, hey, did you do this route? And you're like, yep. And I went this way. Yep. So good one, gang. Thanks for being honest. We're going to have a little quick pit stop break and we'll get into the next two after that. Welcome back. We are back. We had a laugh, glass of water, cup of tea, bit of biscuit. And we are back to crack into the second half of our little list here. Number three, in no particular order, but the third one we're going to talk about tonight involves clips, stick clips, panic draws, long slings, pre-clipping. How many is too many? Discuss.
The anchor might be too many.
Well, if you're narrower, there's only two bolts. So I've definitely clipped two bolts sometimes in narrow. If it means you're not going to like land on your back. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
I've clipped two bolts in the mountains. Veterans Affair at Baronia Point.
Oh, veterans.
Yeah, veterans. Yeah. I had the second one pre-clipped. It was, because the bolt's sort of over to the left. Feels a bit sketchy. Awful fall if you come off onto the first one.
Sometimes it's just really hard to climb those sections. It's just easier to just do it with the bolt.
But I tell anybody that I talk to about veterans, like, yeah, I had the second one clipped.
Yeah, I say that too. Maybe.
Stick clip history.
And they judge me.
Stick clip history.
It wasn't that long ago. You couldn't buy a stick clip.
No, I never bought... I have been climbing for 25 years and I've...
What did you used to do?
I used to use a stick, a wooden stick that you found at the cliff.
Yeah, a eucalypt branch.
And and I thought the plastic
things... With a koala on the end of it.
The plastic
Get off, you little bugger.
Things were blasphemy. The only reason that we have a plastic stick clip is because I was going to Sayus for my third trip and we were taking our 3.5-year-old with us. And
couldn't pack the eucalypt.
Yeah,
that's right.
Customs wouldn't let you.
And I thought, you know what?
I'm not using any of those French sticks.
I'll shut up, you lot. At Sayus, the bolts get further apart as you get higher and higher up the route. I wanted to actually make it to the anchor of a lot of routes, and I left my pride in Australia and took a stick clip. And if I was too scared on a massive run out, I lowered down as much rope as I needed. Could have been 30 meters. No, it wasn't quite that much, but a lot of rope. Picked up the stick clip and stick clipped through the tricky sections so that I could get used to climbing at seas.
So this is even then different because like there's stick clipping to just clip the first bolt off the ground.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
For a safety point of view. But now we're talking about hauling up the stick clip.
Or eucalypt.
Or eucalypt, yeah. Wow. Or whatever your natural radiata pine, perhaps. Or some Tassie oak if you're down south. Yeah, dragging that up the cliff to clip yourself higher and get around things.
Do it on the send.
That would be hard to do.
Leave that but in more horizontal power to
you.
And
in fact, if you did that, you're like, that's actually very impressive.
You'd need knee bar pads, I think.
Yeah, maybe. You'd struggle at saves. But it wasn't that, again, history, that wasn't that long ago when, so stick clips now, if you just started climbing this year or whatever and you're out at the cliff, very common, very accepted, and in fact encouraged, because we've all carried people out of cliffs with broken ankles, to stick clip the first bolt on roots. Like, that's just what people do. And we think that it's good because it definitely prevents a stack of people slipping off the first few moves and getting injured. And sometimes we're at cliffs that have drop-offs and death falls under the roots and stuff. It makes a lot of sense to stick clip the first bolt. But it wasn't that long ago when that was not a thing at all. And you only ever, like, that wasn't just normal practice. And you would only ever do it in very, very unusual circumstances would you ever stick clip. It was common practice to just climb from the ground. And it would only be, and there's still, like, Malcolm Matheson, HB, super famous Australian climber, to this day, as far as I know, will not stick clip the first bolt of any route. And it has caused him to go tumbling down gullies because he will not do it. And even when the routes, a slightly more modern route, might have been bolted. And
like, don't believe the tripe was bolted to have the first bolt stick clipped.
And that's a new concept that people now are like, oh yeah, that's not, and like all the routes I bolt, I'm pretty much bolting them for stick clips unless it doesn't make sense. Because it's just commonly accepted that people have them, and it's always good to have like a high first bolt that's going to be protected with a stick clip rather than one that's like, you know, a bit more than a body length off the ground, and then the climber climbs half a meter above that, falls and hits the ground anyway, like that whole thing. But it's just good for people to kind of recognize that there's been a shift in A, the way routes are bolted, and just the general acceptance of stick clipping. Like, some old school climbers are just not down for any stick clipping, like, not, don't pre-clip one bolt.
I'd like to see
bolt.
Him try and get up the start of Equalizer then, with the Batman start.
With the Batman start, makes it difficult. Have to, I don't know what you do there. Have to jump.
Jump.
I remember watching Zach Vertrees climb the start of Loop to Loop, the 25 at Shipley, and to the, yeah, it's the same thing. You generally stick clip the first bolt and pull up, and he's like, nah. And I just, he did it. And I was just like, oh my God.
So yeah. Do you have an onus to your belayer and the people around you to stick clip for the good of them,
yes,
not having to carry you
and
out?
And to everyone at the cliff to not have to carry you out.
Oh, but you definitely get bold points if you don't stick clip. Yeah.
You get to
unless
puff your chest
you end
out.
Up in hospital.
Yeah.
But that's the gamble. That's how you get the points. It's like you don't get the glory without taking the risk.
I wish you could see eye rolls on podcasts.
What about Andre? Did we see the, like, he just recently came out and said, I mean, he said it a couple of times, I think, that whole, because now many, I mean, you can just, it's climbing is such a thing by degrees. Okay, so we didn't used to stick clip anything. Now we do, and we stick clip the first bolt, and that's completely accepted. Okay, well, you know what's even better than that? Stick clipping the second bolt and the third and the fourth and the fifth, and now we're top roping half of the route, and now we just stick clip the whole route, and now we're top roping the entire route. Somewhere in, it's very, we kind of like scoff and go, oh, that's dumb, you'd never do that. Well, I'm seeing it, like, and Andra's seeing it, and he's like come out publicly and said, like, I do not consider it an ascent if I've got more than the, for myself, because he's not going to make the rules for everybody in climbing, but he kind of does in a way by his behavior, say, oh, I will not count it if I have more than one bolt pre-clipped. And I've seen some stuff, and I was some late stuff with like 13-year-old kids and stuff where they're climbing 8C, 8C plus, blah, 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 quite, you know, high level ascents where, and I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. He's got, the little kid's got three bolts in, which is all of the hard part of the first bit of the route. I'm like, and it's, you know, it's videoed and it's claimed as, you know, maybe a world-class ascent or whatever. I'm like, it actually looks like they're top roping the whole first bit of the, now, if it was my kid, And what I do with my kid at the cliff to keep my kid safe, well, that's my decision as a parent, and that's all fine, and I have no issue with that. But as soon as it's like, oh no, I'm breaking a world record and blah, 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 and I'm going to put video out, and I've pre-clipped the first three bolts through the hard section of this route, I suddenly, me personally, I'm like, well, no, that's not kosher.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an invalid assumption.
As a general rule, I think one bolt clipped is okay. Like, you know, August, clipping the third draw is hard. Like, clipping it's a move. But to be able to climb that route, you should be able to hold the body position to be able to make clip. And I think if you could start with three bolts clipped, but that would make it easier. You'd have just that tiny bit more juice in your arms to do the crux move.
Well, and it's just we are sport climbing, not top roping for it.
Like, however, and that's part of it. I started Veterans Affair with the first two clipped.
I think it comes down to a safety thing there as well. And it's like, yep, you know, if you came off clipping the third bolt on August, that's a crappy fall.
But it's only, no, it's fine. If you've came off...
It'd be awkward.
It'd be awkward, but you've got like your hips at the second bolt. It's an awkward clip partly because your second bolt is so close.
What about, there's that 29 at the Grease Cave at Thompson's Point.
Skin to skin or something.
On the right-hand side, it's like quite short.
Vehicle of hate?
I think it's vehicle of hate. And I thought it was quite a done thing in the day to, I think, fully get climbing tape and tape the quick draw into the roof.
Mm. Ooh, I like it. Yeah, that's a trick.
Yeah, because I think you were close to hitting the ground it was such a tricky clip, and so people would tape it on. I haven't done it, but
yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I would be embarrassed if I had to, I would do it. But I would be embarrassed if anybody saw me doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's more legit. I think that's a different kettle of fish to having, like, you know, half the route top roped.
It is.
But it's still an ethical clipping kind of thing, and it's reducing perhaps the level.
Well,
it's
someone had an Oki strap on Tsunami, didn't they, holding a draw in?
Yeah. That was there for quite a while, holding that long draw in.
I was a bit concerned about the safety issue with the Oki strap, personally.
Yeah, I don't like Oki straps ever. No. Ones hit me in the eye. They're dangerous devices. But you can achieve the same thing, and we have done at, well, when I say we, climbers, because I didn't do this one because I wasn't smart enough, but using sticky Velcro and then, you know, on the cliff to hold a draw into. So rather than using the climber's tape to do what you're talking about and hold the draw in a certain position, use Velcro. And then totally slick method, like really great. So you'd have like one piece of the sticky Velcro on your quick draw, one piece that's stuck to the cliff, flick it into position.
Oh, wow.
And then of course you clip it and it can come off or it can stay there. And if you fall on it, it's going to obviously
fancy.
Oh, so fancy schmancy. Amazing. That's a dirty trick.
The other thing too is like with some of these like long slings and clipped in is like we're also taking the bolt placements for what they are. And we've all bolted and done first ascents and stuff. And you just do sometimes put a bolt in the wrong spot. I think it's good to go back and change the bolt position if it's in the bad spot. But there are people.
Not many people do that though.
Yeah. It takes a bit of work. You're like, oh, cool, it's done. Sweet. Yep, whatever. But going back to make that user experience a good one is, I think, pretty important and a part of your role as a route equipper and developer. Yeah.
It's tricky getting it right on some routes because everyone's so, you know, we're all just such different sized creatures that, you know, I've heard people talk about and like a route you've all done, you know, the 27 at the pit, the name is escaping me. Mono. Yeah. No worry.
Yeah.
People whinging like till they're blue in the face about bolt positions on the top slab because they are. And even like the first time I was up there, I'm like wigging around going, oh yeah, it's really weird and blah, blah, blah. But when you actually look at it from the bolter's perspective in terms of where you would shift that bolt to, there is actually no, but you just, oh, well, you just shift it lower, surely. No, you don't because it throws everything out. Mm. Just to make it better and move a bolt lower is not always the best option because it does certain things when you climb above it or it does certain things to the spacings of what's happening below and all these kinds of things. So yeah, it's a tricky one to get right. Some people really agonize over it and generally do a good job, but I think even the person that does the best job still gets criticized as a bolter. It's like, oh, it's, you've got to have a pretty thick skin, I think, to bolt roots and put them out there.
Yeah. 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 Because you're developing something that is out for the community to sink their teeth into, vicious teeth sometimes.
So how many bolts are okay to have clipped as a general rule?
For me, I'm pretty interested in what the first ascensionist did. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, as an example, a route I bolted last year and climbed here is really short. Like, it's basically three bolts long and the whole route is over and done in like less than 10 meters. Like, it's virtually a boulder route. And it climbs out a roof, along a lip, and then up a small headwall. And I put the first two bolts really close together, like literally almost a meter apart, one just under the roof, one just around the lip. And I climbed it when I was, took me 6 weeks to do the route. And I did do it both ways. So I did it with the first bolt pre-clipped. And then you were having to clip the second bolt out of a knee bar that was so bad that about 50% of the time it would blow. And I just wasn't comfortable. And you might not hit the ground, but you also might hit the ground. And because the bolts were only like a meter apart, I was just like, I'm actually just going to make the decision. It's my route and do whatever the hell I want. I'm actually just going to do it with the two bolts clipped, which actually means that 2/3 of the route is pre-clipped when you think about it, because there's only three bolts on the route. But my then decision is to put in the description, climbed with the, you know, like, put the description of the route and then say climbed with the first two bolts pre-clipped, so that everyone else that comes after A just simply knows how I did it and can either choose to do it or they can choose to not do it. And like somebody that went to repeat it and just put the first one in, I told them the way I did it. They went out there and they couldn't clip the second bolt at all. So it probably would have been clear that if they kept trying the route, they would have done what I did because they would have come to the same conclusion. So for me, it's really, yeah, important to figure out what the first ascensionist did. Generally one bolt for me though, and unless it's an exceptional circumstance.
Yeah, I think it depends on how the route is bolted and how it rolls. Like, you know, Veterans Affair, that first bolt almost could be taken out. Like, it's almost acting more as a belay bolt than it is a climbing bolt, but it's kind of high enough to be, it's just awkward and you just, are not going to fall onto that. You're basically taking like this really crap fall straight onto the ground. And so having two there works quite well. So I think it kind of depends. But I think, like, you know, Lee was talking about people claiming sort of world first, or, you know, if it's a cutting edge ascent, I think you got to be, and especially if it's a repeat, you got to be kind of in line with what everyone else has done. You know, you find your own methods and all that. But if you're claiming something as a new standard or whatever, you gotta tread lightly and do it the ethical way, I think.
Sometimes with pre-clipping, people will, they'll say things like, oh, but it's like, it's not like, it doesn't really matter because the clipping isn't hard or whatever. You know, they use that as the excuse. And I always just think, yeah, but you know what? It's it's actually having it pre-clipped like that. It's not making it any harder, that's for sure. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah,
that's why people skip bolts in cruxes because it gets you more pumped because you've got to stop, pull up a rope, and clip it.
Yeah,
you got to hold for that much longer. Helen, for you?
I think as in the mountains. Yeah, one bolt for sure. And probably in Nowra, I think on a couple of occasions I can think of, times I've clipped two bolts because was appropriate.
It's safer.
Yeah,
I think it comes down to the nature of it, really. Yeah. And I like the idea that it seems to be a new common practice of just dragging the stick clip up as well to help yourself, you know, rather than trying to do a run out section or whatever and just taking those big long falls. Like, just,
I feel embarrassed.
Take the stick clip up.
If you take the stick clip up.
I
feel more embarrassed, to be honest, if I am going to spend an hour and a half on a route because I have to psych myself up on a certain section and there's like six other people that need to get on the route and I'm blocking it. I think it's more polite to go, okay, I've tried to figure this out. I've been climbing long enough to know that I've hit my threshold of sucking it up and trying to be brave. I reckon I can probably do the moves, but I have no idea what those holds are like. And yep, I'm going to get the stick. I'd rather learn something from the root than come down, go home, hope that I grow some more bravery, go back and repeat the same process the next time.
Mm, I've totally done that on climb. It was a Dakota Fire. It's just got like a really awkward third or fourth bolt placement, and like unfamiliar climbing, and I was just like, I just can't keep taking this fall. And so I stick clipped it just to try the section, and you're like, oh, it's so much better. Yeah.
And then you know what to do. You work out the beta, know where the hold is. Yeah.
If your aim is to do a route quickly with the minimal amount of energy, I think that's a good solution. Like if you're on a trip or something and you...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the first time I ever saw it was like an elderly... And not that long ago, it was when we on our trip to San Vito in Sicily. It was an elderly Japanese woman, that's just the cutest, amazing couple that were there. And she... It was, you could just tell, I'd never seen someone take one of the stick clips like up the route. Like she climbed off the ground, went in hard to the first bolt, which was not very high off the ground, pulled the stick clip off her harness, loaded it with a quick draw, clipped the rope into it, reached up, which only just like, it was really close and she could just clip it and then just climbed up and did that on every bolt to the top. And it's, we're talking like it was, you know, quite an easy route, maybe 6B or something, Australian grade 20. She totally looked like, number one, she was really elderly, so I was like, oh, it's good that she's not having bone breaking falls or whatever. But it also looked like she was probably well capable of probably just doing the route, at least from what I could see. But I didn't see how it all panned out, but I just remember it wasn't that long ago, and I remember being very amazed, just like, oh my god, what kind of engineering is going on here, this kind of weird aid climbing. But she was doing her thing, man, and I, you know, I have no issue with it. It's fine. Yeah,
I think it's really clever to do. But then I think about my first go up Groove Train and taking some of those enormous falls on trying to work out the sequence between the bolts at the top there. Like the last 20 meters of climbing is protected by 3 bolts or something like that. Like it's just long sections of climbing that are hard and sustained, not much chalk there, and you got to try and work it out. And taking some of those falls, like it's something that is so special to me, that experience. And that was just, it was awesome. And I'm so glad I got to have it. So
hard to pull a eucalypt up that far that's big enough to reach between those bolts.
Oh, you'd be surprised how far you can get a stick clip to reach.
Really?
Yes. When you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's just,
It's definitely not a general rule.
Choose your adventure with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you got to try and be as brave as you can be, and yeah, on site as much as you can, climb above bolts as much as you can. If there's a queue of 10 people at the bottom of Boronia waiting for you, pull up a stick.
No, don't. It's not your time to be there. Just wait. Like, come back on a day that is less crowded. Don't decide to like sink your teeth into something 4 grades harder than you've ever tried. It's all about stepping up for sure, but choose your day. That day is not your day.
That's another podcast.
Please be considerate. So the last one we're going to talk about is probably the newest one out of all these dirty tricks. And we are talking about fans.
Like people that cheer you on at the cliff saying, allez, allez.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise known as an entourage, groupies.
Venga. You got this.
Yeah. We are talking about portable fans, battery operated.
Oh.
Portable fans.
I would have liked some
to create artificial wind.
Thursday it was kind of a bit hot. My hands were hot. I couldn't get my hands to get cool. I kept chalking up and waiting at the rest and thinking, what am I waiting for? I'm waiting for my fingers to feel cool. And I don't actually feel the heat that badly. I don't mind a warm cliff, as Helen can probably.
I could flap my arms for you.
Yeah. And what I would have liked is like a little fan on my wrist that could cool my fingers down. That would have been good.
What did you think though when you first saw them? Like if you see them in a bouldering video.
Cheating.
Yeah.
Who can be bothered carrying that stuff in to the cliff?
The boys.
Can't be bothered.
Yeah. There's.
Did I just kill that?
Can't be bothered.
Can't be bothered. It's like stick clips. Yeah. Sorry.
I'll find a gum leaf that's come off my eucalypt stick clip and cool myself down with that.
You're learning a lot about people's personalities.
Helen, have you ever put one of those little heat packs in your chalk bag?
Once.
Once? What's the difference between a heat pack and a fan?
Doesn't weigh much.
Doesn't come with a 3 amp hour battery.
Yeah.
No, they are pretty gnarly, these fans. They're exploding, crazy, aren't they?
Yeah.
That whole concept of like taking the conditions with you. I think more so in bouldering, but not only bouldering. And I knew it was, as I just said before, like everything is this thing by degrees. Stick clip one bolt. Oh, how about stick clipping two? Take the fan to the, you know, take a little mini fan just to dry your hands from the liquid chalk. No, now take a big fan. Now take a fan with two batteries to the boulders. Now have a fan man that is going to walk under Dave Graham while he's climbing Ali Hulk Sit Start Extension Total in Rodear, and this guy is going to be carrying the fan with a stepladder throughout 150 moves of roof climbing. Like, what is coming? What is going on? And clearly,
he's a
fan man, and fan man can move to Absal. I think he can move to Absal with a Juma and just follow you up. Don't believe at Baronia.
Sounds amazing.
With
that
a
does
fan.
Sound amazing. I don't have to carry him in.
he's your fan. He'll follow you.
He will bring the fan for a low, low price. Oh. He will bring the fan. He'll bring his own fan. He'll be all charged up, ready to go, and he's just going to hop on Absal on your route and just be ready to track you with a fan.
I'm sorry.
This is where it's going.
A cold drink.
This is where it's going. If you can have a fan blowing really hard on the crux hold of a boulder, why can't you have that same fan and fan man blowing on the crux of your route climbing project?
Because it's off the ground.
How's it different?
It's cheating.
You see people with the fan on a stick holding it up and you're stick clipping already. That's off the ground.
That's as bad as music at the cliff. No.
No, music at the cliff is a complete no. But that's another topic as well.
It's a whole podcast.
Yeah. But yeah, I like fans. I was a complete no before. I was a purist. It's like, no, you got to deal with the conditions. That's what you got. This is just how it is. You got to like wave your arms around and blow on your fingertips to try and cool them down. But then I bought a fan and I won't go back.
What do you do with it?
That's when he's bouldering.
It cools your hands down.
So you just sit on the ground and put your hands.
Yeah, or like it dries holds out. Like if they're getting a bit sweaty from you grabbing them stuff, you put it on there, it cools the rock down, it dries them out a little bit. It's honestly like you can't.
If you've done a fan ascent, it's a great easier.
Yeah, gosh, man, if you had those mad rocks on and a knee bar pad, have you even gone rock climbing? Oh, it's so good. You know, those hot days at the cliff where your face is just red and you're just like, ugh, this sucks. Red you face. Have a couple of Makita job site fans there and it's amazing.
You can really project out what, I mean, I'm talking about fan man on a rope, but so one boulder pad, I mean, before boulder pads, just carrying around a scrap of carpet, falling onto the ground. It's funny pulling up the old bouldering videos from the 90s where people were just bouldering with nothing and then just falling onto the ground. Bam.
We made boulder pads.
Yeah.
They're like hessian sacks around cushions from a couch.
Exactly. Like so, but now we just see not like two mats or something. No, like how did they get all those mats there?
Yeah.
They're in some project and there's 20, like there's a mat pit. So
Padman needs jobs outside of winter, so he becomes fan man for Dave Graham in summer.
So think about like the explosion of pads. Now think about you're so psyched on these fans. Think about the explosions of fans. Like, what's better than one fan?
Dos fans.
Oh, 20 fans. Blowing like with the force of a jet engine on your 45 degree, like, you know, you want to do the green 45, you want to go and do Jade or something. You want to climb V14? Don't have to crimp. Just wear like real baggy MC Hammer suit or even a wingsuit and have 20 fans just blowing you against the cliff with the force of a hurricane. Am I crazy? Why is there silence?
Everyone that's listening to this in their car.
I think we're dumbstruck.
I'm hearing this. You climb. That could be annoying.
No, you have earmuffs.
Earmuffs.
Oh, no.
Noise cancelling headphones.
Or you have the music in your speaker up so loud that you can't hear the fans.
Playing Taylor Trade Swift.
And if you do that, everyone will be so frustrated with you that they won't want to climb at the cliff. So then you won't have crowds, except for you and your fans.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, I'm a fan of fans.
Would you have me on Abseil and you marrying up with a fan at Elphinstone?
If it wasn't inconvenient for you.
I might have to give you shit about that.
That's a no from me. That's a no.
It'd be awesome. I thought about that the other day, like putting one in a break. No, if you had one at, it's a hot day, you put it in the knee bar of Don't Believe the Tripe.
Oh my God, do not even put that out there. It will be, that's what, no. No.
It's out there now.
This could be the future.
No, just go train over summer, leave the cliff to me.
It's so good. Yeah, I think, I don't know.
Lee, are you
where does the line get drawn with that?
Lee, do you own a fan that you...
Or fans got, on drones.
I've got heaps of fans, no. But for the crag that I made at my house, yeah, has a whole bunch of different weather type solutions. Yeah. So
let's unpack the International Space Station.
Yep. So step one, USB small fan. Purpose, drying the hands of liquid chalk when I'm sitting on my bench on moonboard number two. So that's number one. $6.50, Walmart, highly recommended.
As an aside, are you liquid chalk only in COVID at the moment?
In your own wall at home?
Doing your part.
We need a little caption of what that translates as. No, I like to dip my head in the chalk. But I got one of the 20-litre chalk bins. Yeah, just like a horse eating out of a trough. That's what I require. So then the air conditioner, so full AC. Mm-hmm. Then there's the hangboard fan, which is like a clamp, like a clip-on, clamp-on thing, probably 8 inches, blowing across at an angle to the hangboards for maximum gripability on Awesome Woody's edges. So that's number three. And then new for this year coming, the dehumidifier. It was a wet winter. So it was a very humid winter. And when I found out that the interesting thing was, as soon as things got above about 72% humidity, wood holds become very hard to grip. So it'd be like 5 or 6 degrees Celsius, but really high humidity. And it just turned all the wooden holds on the wall into bars of soap. Bought the dehumidifier. It's changed the game. So maybe dehumidify the world at the cliff. Maybe wrap the cliff in plastic. Series of dehumidifiers. This is where I think big. That's what I do. I take it from the small and then think big. We're wrapping Baronia in plastic.
Simpsons Mr. Burns thing where you
block out the sun.
Yeah, put Springfield in that cone.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Someone's going to quote you on that soon. You know, there's going to be some news article quoted. Climber wants to wrap the cliff in plastic.
Okay, we won't wrap it in plastic. We'll wrap it in beeswax impregnated cotton for maximum environmental sustainability. I'm sorry, everybody.
As long as it's a pretty pattern, I think everyone would be pretty all right with that.
But in terms of fans, I think, I love all battery tools. So I guess I'm a fan.
Oh, my God. Oh my God.
You heard it here.
I see where they're going. They started laughing much quicker than the guys that are sitting on the couch did. It took us a couple of extra seconds. 18-volt lithium? Question mark? So, yeah, I think I'm a fan of fans. I don't own the big portable one, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
No.
Helen.
I think I'd be quite happy to give people shit about using them, but I may use their fan at the cliff.
I'm not going to buy one.
No, I would never buy one, but I'd be like, hey, can I just have a look?
Yeah.
And you would use the fan in the break?
If someone put it there.
And as long as you didn't have to carry it in.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we'll have to have some bouldering sessions under the house this summer and we'll put the fan on. You can get fully used to it. It's like when you finally work out what good conditions feel like and then you're like, I'm not climbing in anything else.
Yeah.
Nope, I refuse. It's not worth it.
I need fan man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fan man.
No to fans.
No to fans, really.
Fine for fans for bouldering. Yep. Fans at the cliff on the ground, sure. Fans on the cliff in a break, no.
What about when I saw, shouldn't say names, the fan like strapped to the boulder. So fan on the ground, but then there's also this part of the boulder that was obviously the crux or something. Man. What about like the fan kind of like hanging off a sling on the boulder itself?
That's a lot of work, isn't it? It
looks messy.
For Helen, it is.
That's just way too much work. You got to give them like points for sure.
Couldn't be bothered.
But maybe there's like a graph that we can make, and having the fan there is putting the fan up is less effort to climb the boulder with the fan and climb the boulder than climbing it without.
Stunned silence.
Do you understand?
We're still thinking about you with the battery tools.
I'm a fan. I'm taking it. Maybe the cliff is a stretch too far at the moment, but we're baby steps at the moment.
We need a YouTube video that shows us which is the best fan to buy.
Yeah, that would be good. If you check out Baffle Day's YouTube, go check it out. Work out which one to get.
But not to use above the ground at a rock climbing cliff only for bouldering, please.
Let's wait until I'm waiting to see the first. I've not yet seen, because they're quite new. I want to see the first climbing fan related accident.
Falls on someone.
Well, maybe you're talking about the green 45, Jade. There's a boulder problem to the left of that, Blade Runner. Maybe that's a reference to some sort of mishap.
No. Yeah, where the fan blade flies out and it's possible. Yeah. I think it's a watch this space for the fans in terms of just the craziness that we're going to see over the next 18 months as people start getting creative with all the weird and wacky things that they doing, like bolting them together and there's going to be fan madness, I suspect.
Backpacks.
Fan backpacks.
Mm. Point them the other way. It's like a jetpack.
Oh, you just gave Lee an idea.
Strapping it to your bum. Blow you up the cliff.
No.
Portable wind, I take care of a different way.
I think there's some delirium happening. I think everyone's a little tired.
Awesome. Well, anyway, that is the first edition of the Baffle Days Dirty Tricks.
But there's so much more to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about. But tonight we spoke about knee bar pads and knee barring. McDougaling, some sort of stick clips, pre-clipping, what's too much, what's not enough, where does the line get drawn, and fans. I'm a fan of all of these and some of them, none of them, but we'll all just move on. Thank you everyone for coming along, Helen and Lee. Thank you for being here and sharing your opinion with us.
I want people to weigh in the comments.
Yeah, 100%.
Disagree with us. Tell us where we got it wrong. Like and subscribe.
Maybe not me. I'm a little more sensitive.
If you agree with Amanda, definitely reach out.
If you disagree, maybe send
just
me a hug.
Keep quiet.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, thanks, Helen. Thanks for coming along.
That was fun.
Amanda, thank you as always.
It's okay.
Happy to have you. Unimpressed. Thanks everyone for listening in. We'll catch you on the next one.